I will give a quick retcon. It had previously stated that the last magic user that was there was over a year or a year and a half ago or something to that effect. And it occurred to me last week as I was listening that Alea is also a magic user, and that's definitely been within the last year. So tossing that out there. And I apologize in advance for any and all rules that I have broken, whether intentionally or otherwise. Anywho, last time, having received an invitation to Bruman's hometown, you find yourselves in Chansen, a city in a mysterious war that's been ongoing for 12 years. Despite your best efforts at asking politely, you have not been given much more information about the war, whether because the one answering did not know, was too suspicious of you, or didn't care to speak of it. This morning you joined Bruman for breakfast in the dining room, where you met most of his family. Afterwards, you agreed to discuss what you knew of Liviana with the council. The council gave you little more information, but seemed concerned by the idea of a magic user in Arabin, despite Arabin's apparent distaste of her. Toward the end of the meeting, when one suspicious council member spoke his mind, Bruman stepped forward and put you under his honor, taking upon himself the consequences of any ill choices you may make in the future. Shortly thereafter, you all parted ways to allow Brew some time to rest. Katsu enjoyed a discussion with Celeste, both teaching and learning new cleric spells. Sadra and Mew removed themselves to the family library, searching for local information. And Azel went outside, where she found Coda with his nanny and nephew. And this is where we begin. Belarod, you are in your office. It's mid-morning, and you are poring over all the scout reports from the previous few days. Thaddeus reported back to you not long ago, giving you details from the council meeting that you sent him to in your stead. A soft knock on the door interrupts the quiet rustling of papers and otherwise stillness of your office.
He shuffles some of the papers off to the side and calls out, "Come in."
The door opens and Chas enters.
Oh, good. Close the door and take a seat.
She looks at you very, very specifically and glances around the room. Nobody else is in there?
Nope.
I'd rather not.
He had looked down and was shuffling a few more papers off to the side, and he looks up with a directed look. You're here to give the report, right?
If that is what you seek, yes.
Then close the door and sit down and give the report.
She doesn't move, glances around again and says, "Could I at least get Thaddeus first?"
Why?
You know perfectly well why it is improper for us to be alone in a room with the door closed.
He has a slightly incredulous look. And after training for a year, you still think this a problem. Why is it not a problem anytime else?
She gives you a very stern look and says, "Because propriety makes more sense inside the city."
That makes absolutely no sense. Fine, if you must, go get him.
Thank you. And she will turn and leave. In a couple minutes, she'll be back with Thaddeus, the scout that offered Brew his horse last night, technically. But then she'll come in and close the door with Thaddeus there, and both of them will take a seat if you have two chairs in there.
Yeah, there'd be probably three or four chairs in there. Various scouting groups might have more people give them a report at the same time. So, yeah, there's two chairs for them to sit in.
All right, they take a seat, and Shass looks at you.
He looks up, says, "So I hear you got closer to this enemy camp than even any of my other scouts. Tell me, how did you do that, and what did you see?"
She gives you a wry smile. "I was just tracking Bruce's friends. Just kept to the shadows, made sure no one saw." "As to what I saw a scout camp. Pretty big. You know, you saw most of the people there when you arrived yourself."
"Did you see any of them when they were across our border?"
"Okay, out of character. Question for you, Steele. How much would Balrod have already asked her at the scout camp?"
She kind of flipped him off and left, so probably not anything."
Specifically before then, but okay.
Probably not a whole lot, just enough to get where they were going and get people moving.
Okay. Back in character then. She'll give you a look that, you know, she probably was not where she was supposed to be, but, she'll say, "Well, technically, yes, but it wasn't a scout, technically."
He sighs a little bit. "Still don't like you putting yourself in danger like that, but for now, we just need the info. What did you see? How did they get in?"
"I don't know how they got in. They were in when I found them. It was just Galen, and he found a lady. I think they called her Liviana. But he was trying to get her off Chanson's lands. That much was very clear, so I didn't stop him."
"Liviana was on Chanson land?"
"As far as I could tell, yes. I mean, she was obviously standing on our land."
"This I will have to look into more. Is there anything else you think would be of importance that the scouts should know?"
She thinks for a little bit. "Would she have reason to suppose that the rest of the scouts already told their side of the story?"
"That could be assumed, yes. Balrod is very strict about his information gathering and wants reports as quickly as possible."
She'll take a deep breath and say, "Well, nothing comes to mind that the others probably haven't already told you. I'm sure Thaddeus told you we were supposed to be keeping a closer eye on Arabin and the borders."
"After two of the Bertrams waltzed onto our land like that, yes, we should keep a closer eye." And she could see some of the frustration at that situation boiling up. But, and it'll shake his head, "All right. If that's all you have to report, you're dismissed."
"Yes, sir." And she and Thaddeus will get up and leave the room and close the door behind her. Do you stay there?
Yeah. He'll have stuff he wants to do later, but most of that can be handled off screen.
All right. So then you get back to your papers, and about 5 minutes later, you hear another knock on your door.
Not expecting any other visitors at the moment. He's a bit surprised, but he'll call out, "Come in."
The door will open, and it's Jess again. And she hasn't stepped very far in, but you can tell she's been considering things, and her eyes are lowered a little bit. She doesn't look at you, and she just says, "I'm sorry I was disrespectful to you. I understand that that was not correct." And then she'll turn and leave.
She'll hear a little bit of a peep of his voice as he was starting to say something, but then stopped as she left. Did she leave his door just hanging open?
And she probably closed it behind her, since okay. It was closed. And, Rydia, can you still hear me all right?
Off and on.
All right, well, we'll try this then and hope that off and on is good enough. Chas will leave the office of Belarod and make her way home, but she doesn't go inside because she hears Coda outside, and she will then assume that if Coda's outside, Lillian is outside as well. So she will come around the back of the house and see you out with Coda and Lillian and lead.
Izul will turn and smile at her. Oh, hello, Shas. How are you?
Oh, better than expected, thank you.
Good.
And how about you? Are you enjoying your time?
I am. It's quite lovely here.
And she will smile, almost a relieved smile, and say, "I'm glad to hear that. I rather am fond of it myself."
I and got half of that.
She's glad. Here, I'll type it.
That was actually worse than the last time. Izul will laugh. Well, you should be. It is your home.
And I wouldn't change it for the world.
Izul will smile brightly. Good, you should. Care to join us making snowmen?
She will laugh. Absolutely.
Good. And Izul will continue on making snowmen. And once Shas is probably kneeling on the ground beside him, she'll toss a little bit of snow her way.
She will laugh and say, "You know, Bruman told us not to get into any snowball fights with you."
Yes. Yes, I know. Quite disappointed about that fact.
Well, I would take it as a compliment. That means he thinks you're quite good at it.
Well, I suppose you could say that. I have had a little bit of practice.
Has there been any snow in Riddleport?
I don't think there actually has there? No. No, there hasn't, but Where I'm from, we get quite a bit of snow.
So do you like the snow, or are you tired of the snow?
I did not catch that at all. I quite enjoy this now. It's quite a lot of fun.
I agree. It can be great fun. At the right time of year. Regardless of how well ready I can hear, I'll try to keep talking. At some point, Shas will look over at Lillian and ask her if she's still mad at her. And Lillian will give her a look and say, I should be mad at you. But no, I'm not. I suppose I'll forgive you this time. And Shas will look at Azel and say, I'm assuming you two have gotten to know each other a little bit?
I'm not sure if the music might be eating up some of the bandwidth. I might stop it just in case, because I know we had the same problem with Quicksilver after the hurricane.
Should we come back to this scene perhaps in a little bit and move on? Okay, I will do that. Hopefully we're not offending you, Riddy. I'm sorry. Okay. We will jump over to Mew and Sedra in the library. You two have been reading for a while, perhaps maybe an hour or two. I'm assuming you're not the type of reader that reads for 8 hours straight without, you know, any eyesore or anything. Do you pause at all to talk to each other or to look around the room more or anything like that?
I do. Mew, seeing that Sedra is in the same raid, will say, "Well, I think I found out about as much as I can about the town. Every word that I read makes this war seem more and more strange."
Yes, I read some about the town as well, and there's nothing that seems to make any sense. Why they would be at war with each other, let alone what Erebin might gain from this. Seems like they should be family, not enemies.
Agreed.
But Mew would notice, if he's looking, that books that are sitting around her are actually religious books about Kyrie.
Yes, I see what you mean. I mean, these cities are quite literally sister cities. Now, what have you found?
Well, of course, the two cities were built for the two daughters, but it seems like there's been peace ever since then, until just recently, that they trade with each other and they tend to each other when one is down, and it doesn't sound like any deep-seated, long hatred.
Something must have come up. Something must have happened. I don't see people who, when one is down, offers humanitarian aid for no reason whatsoever, just turning and killing each other.
There are, well, I don't know if it exists in this world, but where I come from, there are certain magics that can cause people to act outside of their own will, sort of puppets to someone else who's behind them in the shadows. I hate to think it, but I don't know of very many other reasons why long-time friends would suddenly turn on each other.
I agree. Though you did bring something up that I hadn't thought about before. The two towns, they still trade with one another. Now, I believe they said that they have merchants that go between the two towns. Perhaps we can go speak with some of them. The people of the town may not want to talk about the war, but the merchants. Well, it might hurt their business, harm their business. It's got to be strange for them.
Yes, I think that might be an excellent idea. And who knows? If we have to, perhaps we should go and pay a visit to Erebin ourselves.
Well, we were asked not to leave town, and I wish we hadn't been asked.
Well, we were asked not to leave town, but time may change.
Indeed. If Erebin were a bit closer, well, I'd sneak out at night and make my way there, but it's a whole day's ride. I can't make it that far. Not yet.
Well, there is, I believe, one beacon of hope in all of this, and that is that both cities are followers of the same god. They all worship very faithfully the Lord Kyrie himself. And if they share faith, then there must be hope that they can overcome their differences.
I would hope so. But I've seen people, good people. I don't know. I don't know. This war is wrong in every sense of the word.
I think I would still like to go and visit the temple that they'd spoken of. Perhaps Bruman will show us where it is. Certainly, their religious leaders, their priests, would also want to see such needless bloodshed ended. Perhaps they can give us some insight.
I will follow your lead.
Well then, and she stands up off of her seat, carefully setting the books back, but leaving them out. She's going to come back, but she stands up and kind of bounces on her toes a little bit before saying,
"The day is not all spent yet. Perhaps we can go and find someone and they could show us where the temple is before dinner."
Indeed. Let's see what we can find.
And Sadra will head out to see if they can find somebody who can take them into town and either speak to merchants from Erevan or speak to priests at the temple.
Okay, you said you're leaving the room?
Yes.
Are you looking for anyone in specific or just leaving the room?
Sadra is going to go and see if there is somebody who can give them direction as to where to go in town to find the Church of Kyrie. And also the market.
Okay. As you step into the hallway, you can still hear Celeste and Marianne in the kitchen.
Perhaps we can speak with them.
Sadra smiles and nods, and will walk with Mew towards the kitchen.
All right, you enter the kitchen. There's still, Marianne seems to be perhaps preparing a small plate, probably for Lead. It's probably getting close to time for him to eat and then go to bed for a nap in the afternoon. And Celeste is, she looks like she's preparing to take the stew that she had simmering earlier and a couple other things like bread and stuff, and other easily transportable side dishes, and she looks like she's preparing to take them somewhere else. And she will look up at the two of you as you enter and smile and welcome you back to her kitchen.
It's always good to be back.
And it does smell so good. What did you put in the stew?
And she'll give you a broad smile. Well, it's just a basic rabbit stew. You have your rabbit, of course, And then you have a lot of the root vegetables. They're a little bit easier to, you know, keep around for a while, especially in the wintertime. And then, of course, fresh herbs. I always like to keep my herbs fresh. And she will point over to her collection of fresh herbs.
Well, it does smell wonderful. It looks like you're both fairly busy. Perhaps this is a bad time.
Of course not. What can we do for you?
Would it be possible for someone to show us into town? I was hoping to go and see the church to Kyrie, and also perhaps the market.
Celeste opens her mouth to respond, but stops herself. And you can see an idea light in the back of her mind. And she'll smile at you and say, I would happily escort you there. Would you be willing to help me in exchange?
If there's anything that we can do to help, I know that you and I would love to help.
Indeed.
Well then, you go get your cloaks and meet me back here, and you can help me with my duties, and I will help you with what you seek.
And Sadra goes to get her cloak.
As does Mew.
Alrighty. When you get back to the kitchen, Celeste is pretty much ready to go. And she will hand Sadra a basket that has some breads and stuff in it. And she will hand Mew something very similar. Probably doesn't have bread. It might have some of her other side dishes and stuff in it. And then she will pick up the pot of stew that she was making and give you a brilliant smile and say, follow me.
Lead the way.
And Celeste will lead you down the long hallway and through the big front room, down the front porch, and into the city. And it's not a horribly long walk. Probably takes you maybe 5 to 7 minutes or so. And she stops outside of a house and looks at one of you and says, could you please knock on the door?
All right, I'll do it. And Mew steps up and raps on the door sharply 3 times.
After about half a minute, 20-something probably, young man opens the door and greets you with a smile for Celeste and a little bit of confusion. He doesn't recognize the other two of you, but he smiles broadly at Celeste and graciously welcomes you into his home. And Celeste will start speaking. I hope you don't mind we're a little bit early, Master David, but, well, the stew is ready. Say what?
Hey.
Sorry, it cut out. I think I missed the last part of that.
Okay, what was the last you heard?
The child opened the door and smiled at Celeste, but didn't seem as sure of the rest of us.
Yeah, he's a young man, probably in his 20s.
Not so much child.
Right. But he will let you into his house, and Celeste apologizes for being a little bit early, but states that the stew was ready, so she brought Bruman's friends, and she hopes it's not an imposition. And the man's like, oh, no, absolutely not. You are welcome anytime, Celeste. And she will walk into the house and lead the way in, and if you would like to follow her, you may, or you can stop just inside. Up to you guys.
Sadra will follow her.
Of course. It'd be rude not to.
Alright, so let's actually lead you through the house. She seems very familiar with the house, actually, and goes straight to the kitchen, and that's where she leaves her pot of stew, and she indicates for Mew to leave his basket there. But says perhaps they just should keep her basket for a little bit longer. But she gets that all ready, and Master David has followed you all into the kitchen as well and goes, "Oh, Lady Celeste smells amazing. Thank you so much." And Celeste will smile brilliantly at him and say, "And where are the little ones, if I may ask?" And he will chuckle and say, "And she's in the sitting room. You may go in." And Celeste will turn to you both, give you something of a sly smile, and say, "This way."
Right. Mew is starting to get a little bit suspicious.
Cedra is not suspicious at all.
Alright. Celeste goes down the hallway towards the sitting room, knocks lightly on the door, and says, "Melanie, dear, may we come in?" And you hear another lady's voice calling, "Oh, absolutely, Celeste, you're always welcome." And she will walk in. It's a fairly well-lit room. There's a young woman sitting there, also probably in her 20s. Sorry, my brain just emptied for a moment. So she's in her 20s. She's actually holding a newborn baby, and there's probably a two-year-old nearby. And she looks up and smiles at you all, and Celeste says, "I hope you don't mind I brought guests with me. These are Brumman's friends." And Melanie will look at both of you and smile brilliantly. "Any friends of the Danans are friends of ours. Welcome to our home."
"The pleasure is all ours. Your name was Dee?"
"Melanie."
"Melanie, thank you."
"You have a lovely home."
"Thank you kindly, though." And she looks around. "It's not quite as clean as I would prefer it to be." And Celeste will laugh and say, "My dear, you just had a child. Your house should not be clean. You should enjoy every moment with it." And she will actually go over to Melanie, and Melanie will let her take the newborn baby from her, and Celeste will bring it over to you too and let you look at the baby.
Cedra gets two new eye shines as the baby gets closer.
His face breaks into a huge grin as he holds a single finger towards the baby. "Boy or girl?" is what he says.
"It's a little girl." And Celeste will glance over her shoulder towards Melanie, and Melanie will nod at her, and Celeste will turn back. "Would either of you like to hold her?"
He looks over at Cedra and says, "I'm sure someone would fight me for it. But I can wait my turn."
Cedra, very happily, will take a turn at holding the baby.
And Celeste will hand the baby over and smile broadly, and then turn to Mew and say, "You said you would be willing to help me, yes?"
"I did."
"Well, if Melanie feels that this house isn't clean, perhaps we should clean it up for her."
Mew, it's almost as if he doesn't even wait for your sentence to finish before he goes, reaches into his sleeve and pulls out a single handkerchief. Says, "I'll get to dusting."
Celeste laughs and also gets busy, probably finds a broom and starts sweeping. And Melanie will motion to Cedra to come over and sit near her. And she'll say, "So you're a friend of Master Brumman's, are you?"
"Oh, yes. I actually met Brumman and the others only a couple of months ago now, but the others have known him for a long time. He has been a great friend and gentleman."
And she smiles at you. "Well, I don't doubt it one moment. So where are you from, if I may ask?"
"I I'm from... Well, my home is very far from here. And very different as well. It's called Cordoba. It's in a desert. So... It's very cold here.
And she grins.
Oh, I can only imagine. I do hope you're warm enough.
I am warm for the time. And with this sweet bundle here, I think I should have all of the warmth that I will ever need.
Melanie grins at you broadly. I am so glad we had a girl this time. Don't get me wrong. I love our son to pieces, but I'm utterly thrilled to have a daughter.
How old is your son?
He's 2.5.
Oh.
And out of character. Were you particularly hiding that you used magic there, Mew?
Not particularly, no.
And next question, would Celeste have recognized that that was magic that you used?
I guess that would be a spellcraft check. But it's really low since it's a zero level spell.
Okay. Well, she has no ranks in spellcraft, so she can't actually do that check. So then the next question would be, would she have a suspicion based off of anything that Brew would have said or could have said?
If Brew talked about friends like at all, you would probably know that, Mew is their primary arcane caster.
Okay. She might not 100% fully understand what you did, but if she clearly saw that you did that, then she will step up near Melanie again. And say, Melanie, dear, where was it that you put that shawl that your wonderful husband managed to stain irreparably? And Melanie will give her a confused look and say, well, it's in the cabinet, dear, but why would you... Never mind. Whatever you would like. And Celeste will give her a brilliant smile and go to out of the room. And she knows which cabinet that Melanie is talking about. She comes back later, a couple of minutes later, and hands it to Mew and says, perhaps, Master Mew, you would have a special talent at getting this clean.
I have many special talents in getting things clean. And he will place it on the table in front of him. Is there any warm water around?
And there is a kitchen nearby, so...
Excellent. He'll basically just go for put it in the sink. Once again, just tap his fingers and it is clean as he pulls it out.
And do you show Melanie?
Of course I do.
She is utterly astounded that you have managed to get that out when she has worked so hard to get it out herself. And she excitedly calls her husband into the room. And he's like, okay, wow, strangers, okay, what's going on? And she points over to the shawl and goes, Master Bruman's friends, he got the stain out. And David gives you this look of deep gratitude because it was probably one of his wife's favorite shawls that he somehow managed to utterly destroy. And you have officially saved it.
Mew gives a deep bow and says, it is my pleasure to help you in any way.
And Celeste gives you another sly smile.
And he goes back over to the corner and starts stacking up plates because he knows how the magic works and he can actually clean stuff in a 1 foot cube. So it'll just make things faster.
At this point, as Mew is going back to cleaning, and Tater's still next to Melanie with the baby, David will turn to Celeste and say, "You must thank Master Brumman. I so appreciated not having to be on the wall." And Melanie will pipe up, "Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, you are Master Brumman's friends. Oh, I'm so sorry. He was on the wall last night, wasn't he?"
Think so. I believe he said he was keeping watch.
David will scratch the back of his head. Oh. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to... I'm sure he's probably sleeping. I didn't mean to take your friends from you. But I really do appreciate being able to stay home last night.
Born daughter. Of course. You need to spend time with her. These days aren't very long.
Sadra's gonna start trying to figure out what facial features came from which parent.
Yeah, as you're observing daughter and father after Mew's comment, you see this look pass across his face, and you can pretty easily see that he has this thought of, yeah, gotta enjoy every day I have, because who's to say when's going to be the last? But Celeste will do her best to pick up the conversation again. And also go over to the two-year-old and perhaps engage him as well, because he seems a little put out that he's got a little sister now. And, you know, he's not getting as much attention as he used to.
While Celeste is over giving attention to the two-year-old, Sadra's just going to kind of, in a low voice, talking to Melanie, tell her, "It is such a shame that this war or fighting is going on in the land. We really didn't know very much about it until we got here. Why would anyone fight?"
Melanie gives you kind of a half sad, half measured look. Because I'm not surprised you haven't heard much about it. I very much doubt Master Brumman would have brought it up. But as to why, I don't know. I've wondered that for many years.
Have the Airbin said anything? Anything at all?
David will shake his head. "Not that I've heard of. Not that we're particularly, you know, in the know. Probably get more information from the Danans. Have you talked with them about it yet?"
"We have, and unfortunately, as much information as we would like has come to us."
"You and the rest of all of us."
"One way or another, the war's not in here. We enjoy each other's company. Help each other out. live our lives.
Melanie will smile at you. Absolutely. We do our best to keep good morale during respite. It's a lot easier these days than it used to be. And the war seems so far off, and yet, well, I know it's coming again. We won't think about it now, though. New Year's is coming up, and we get to celebrate it this year. And that's something happy.
Oh, exactly what day is New Year's?
2 days from now. Not tomorrow, but the day after.
Sadra is going to glance around the room and see if there's any iconography for Kyrie and his religion in the house. And that is a 16 perception.
Yeah, I mean, you probably get hints that they probably do follow Kyrie. It's not like they're not like super devout Roman Catholics that have statues of Jesus everywhere, but they probably do have something around that would make you think that they are followers of Kyrie.
Okay. And then she's, as long as it takes Mew to clean and Celeste to complete her work here, Sadra will happily hold the baby as long as she can and just continue to chat.
Mew will let you hold the baby for 20 minutes.
And he's counting.
Indeed. And it honestly does not take him very long to clean a good portion of the house. He's good at it. Magical cleaning powers.
When Sadra and Mew switch places with the baby, Melanie will ask if either of you have any close relatives that might have children.
Mew?
Both of you.
Mew just shakes his head, but doesn't say anything further.
Sadra gives kind of a tight smile and just shakes her head as well as a no. But she is definitely somber at that comment. So, although she tries to play it off. So she will do a bluff check.
Go ahead.
And that's a 27 on her bluff.
Yep, they have no clue that you are bluffing. Melanie will smile and say, well, so long as you are in town, however long that may be, you are welcome to come visit and get baby snuggles. I can't promise you'll always be in a good mood, though.
Well, I always appreciated it, though I wouldn't just offering any time. If you don't mind us coming over every, say, half hour or so.
Melanie bursts out in laughter. As will Celeste, actually. She'll point out that Brew might get a little jealous of a little baby if his friends were more taken with the baby.
And Sadra will speak up and say, well, then he should have taken that into consideration.
Celeste gets an incredibly mischievous look on her face for a moment, but doesn't say anything. And however long you all would like to stay, Celeste will not hurry you too much. She does have another place to go, and she knows you guys want to go places as well.
Yeah, it takes me about an hour to finish cleaning absolutely everything. But when he's done, it looks polished.
And Melanie is very, very, very grateful. She has not felt that she has been able to keep her house up quite as well as she would prefer. And David is very grateful as well, because he's tried, but new baby and two-year-old and, you know, he's happy to get 3 hours of sleep in a row, so. Alright, as you all leave, just for kicks, I'll have you guys make a perception check.
Okay.
Fifteen.
21 perception.
Alrighty, you both definitely hear Celeste. She had lowered her voice as she was ushering you guys out, but she made sure to point out to both David and Melanie that Mew has fantastically cleaned this house, but he didn't do it with just his own two hands. He definitely used magic. And isn't magic such a great thing?
Sense motive.
Go ahead.
Total of 20.
And what would that be against?
A bluff, I guess.
Even if she's not trying to lie?
I mean, the reason he's doing it is he wants to know why is she specifically pointing out that this is done by magic.
Okay, and what'd you roll?
Total OT.
You get the idea. She's trying to start a rumor that magic is good.
Okay. Okay.
And she totally brought you to a house that has a newborn child, and the child is perfectly fine. And you both held it. So therefore, Bruman's friends are also perfectly fine.
I see.
But she will lead you out of the house if you are following.
Indeed.
And she'll walk down a couple streets more. And since she has the extra basket that she told Sadra to not leave there, she would knock on another door. And it's an older lady comes to the door and smiles broadly. Oh, it's the Angel of Chanson coming to visit me. Come in, come in. Oh, and you brought new friends. Come in, come in.
He bows and says, at your service, my lady.
Oh, what a gentleman.
Sadra also bows respectfully and follows inside.
And Celeste will smile broadly and hand over the basket and say, we brought you some good food, Granny. How are you feeling today? And the old woman will take the basket and go, oh, you are such a gem, dear. Just a gem. Thank you, thank you. I am, well, I get along.
What seems to be ailing you? Is there anything we can help with?
And she gives you a keen look and says, old age. If you can manage it, don't get old.
I unfortunately think I've already slipped a little my way into that. And you recall that Mew has, and you recall that Mew has never stated his age.
And she will just tisk tisk tisk. And Celeste will actually introduce the both of you again as Bruman's friends from out of town. And the old lady will go, "Oh, yes, yes, I recall that he was away. I'm so glad to know that he has made friends. Sometimes you have to wonder." And she pokes Celeste and then laughs as though she just told a great joke.
Sadra smiles and says, "You sound as though you've known Bruman since he was a small child. Did he have trouble making friends?"
She laughs more to herself again. It's, "Oh, no, no. I'm just teasing. I mean, yes, yes, but no, no. Yes, yes, I have known him since he was born. In fact, I knew his father when he was a child, but that's not here or there. And, I don't think he's ever struggled. He's always been running around with that girl, his twin, almost. We call them twins." And she'll stop and look at Celeste and goes, "I don't recall. Are they actually?" And Celeste will laugh and say, "No, no twins in our family." "But I must know. I understand that you are Master Bruman's friends, but why would you come to visit such a small town out of the way?"
"We wish to see Bruman's home, his friends, his family. It's made him into the great person that he is. And I think we found it," and he gives a bit of a wink.
And she will chuckle at you.
"Is there anything in particular you would like to drink?"
"Oh, I only drink water these days, my boy."
"Do you miss any old tastes from home? Possibly some warm cider?"
And Celeste will give her give Granny a significant look. And Granny will kind of tilt her head and say, "Whatever you can muster up, good sir."
"I can muster quite a bit. Try me."
"Oh, it sounds like a challenge. Give me your best."
"All right, how about some spiced cinnamon cider with a faint hint of peppermint? Warm, but not too hot."
She seems pleased by this idea and waits.
Yeah, Mew will go over and get Ape. Then he will... oh, sure. He will fill it with water. And as he looks at the water, he actually focuses on it. And you see it will actually change from clear to almost a faint reddish tint. He will snap his fingers again. And you will see a bit of steam rising from it. And then one last time he will snap his fingers and he'll turn around and say, "I do believe that will do it."
And was he doing this with his back turned?
No, not particularly.
All right. She will take it from you if you offered it to her, right?
Of course.
And she will take it from you and give you a dubious look, but then take a sip and you see the look of delight on her face and go, "Why? This is magical, simply magical."
"Well, you've got that perfectly correct." And I can guarantee you, there are no calories.
Both the ladies laugh at that.
Anything else you'd like?
Why, this is more than I could ever ask. Miss Celeste here always does such a good job of keeping me plentiful. And Celeste will smile over at you.
I can do what I can. Well, I can't be here all the time, but I'm glad that she is here. Let's keep the city the way the Kyrie would want it to be.
And she seems to very much approve of this statement.
It does seem such a shame that in these recent years the fighting has broken out. I can't imagine that would make any god as benevolent as Kyrie believe he would be most disappointed by that.
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
Sadra speaks up and she says, "It is most disappointing, though, the fighting that seems to have taken place over the past several years between Chance and Erebin. I shouldn't think that a deity as benevolent as Kyrie would approve of such behavior."
And the old woman will nod her head. "I can understand how you could say that. And yes, it is a sad thing. I remember the days when we were at peace and had great community. Ah, they were wonderful. But do not doubt Kyrie's goodwill, for Kyrie has protected us these years."
Of course. Do you remember the way the day... I'm glad to see that all of you are still here and well. You say you remember the days when peace reigned throughout the land. Do you remember the day that it changed?
Well, anyone that's of any age to remember should surely remember that day.
Unfortunately, I wasn't here. Could you recount it for me?
Her face clouds a little bit. And she seems like she's thinking about it for a little bit. And then says, "I think I would rather not. It has been a good respite, and I would hate to break it. But perhaps Miss Celeste will tell you more. Go ahead."
All right. She's doing a sense motive to see if this is a inability to speak on it. Like, the memories vanished, were, you know, a look like she suddenly forgot and couldn't bring it up, or if that was a very definite, the lady remembers the day, but she doesn't want to talk about it sort of thing. And that is a total of 22 on the sense motive.
All right. She seems to remember it very, very well. You kind of get the idea that she probably lost somebody that she loved.
Then Sadra is going to speak up, and she's going to say, "There are dark days in all of our pasts, I believe. I don't think I should ever forget the day when my family was killed. But holding these things in and never letting them come out. My father used to say that it was a poison. You kept it inside, that eventually the grief and the bitterness would kill you." And she's going to do a diplomacy check to see if she can convince the lady to talk about it.
Okie doke.
That is a total 19.
She will smile at you, sadly, and consider what you have said. And she'll take a deep breath and say, I do not want you to think that I am bitter. I was, many years ago, for a while, I will admit. That's not what Kyrie would wish. Forgiveness is hard, but, well, I have forgiven. You want to know, so I will tell you. And then she will tell you, do you want this in her voice, or you just want an overview?
In her voice would be great.
Okay.
You know, hey, it doesn't have to be in her voice. No, it's cool. It's cool. Take as much time as y'all need.
Indeed.
Steel, your comment in chat. Who are you saying was mean?
That sounded like you were forcing the lady to talk.
Well, talking about your pain is a good way to get it out and to heal.
And it wasn't forcing, it was gentle nudging.
And Sadra does have a lot of loss in her past as well. So it was from a place of understanding.
For the record, I was about to say that myself. He just beat me to the punchline. Alright, well, if y'all are ready, we can keep going.
That was a fast intermission.
That was a run out of the room in panic. But if you need more time for intermission, I can wait and collect my thoughts.
Whatever works best for you.
I think I'm ready, if you guys are.
Ready whenever.
Ready.
Alrighty. The old lady will collect her thoughts and get something of a faraway look in her eyes as she's remembering. And she'll say, well, it was a good day. Or it started out a good day. We were celebrating a bountiful harvest with our festivals, and Well, much like we will in a couple days, we were enjoying the company of our kindred, our kinsfolk. We had, of course, invited Erebin to come and celebrate with us, as we did all the time. But they did not come, at least not how we expected. In the midst of our celebration, the bell suddenly began to toll. None of us were expecting it. And, well, we did our best, but... Well, it was hard fought, but we did win that round. Not sure you could say we have actually won, but that is how it began.
So during the harvest...
She nods.
He turns to Sadra and says, no provocation. None.
Hey guys, thank you very much for watching. This is my friend Taylor Davis.
Sadra has a pained expression as she's listening to the story and says, I'm so sorry.
As am I.
The old woman will lean forward and take Sadra's hand in her own and give it a little pat and say, and I am sorry to hear that you have lost those you love as well.
Yu looks down and nods slowly.
Sadra drops her gaze quickly when it suddenly spotlighted back on her own loss.
The old woman will speak up again. But this is respite. We do not like bringing down the tone of respite. So let us think of happier things. Our celebration for New Year's is in 2 days. Will you be joining us?
Of course. Wouldn't miss it.
And you look over at Celeste. And what about your good mother? Will she be out this year as well? And Celeste will smile and say, of course, Granny. She wouldn't miss it even if she were ill. I'm sure she would find a way out. Oh, good. I do hope I get to see her this year. Do tell her to come find me. And Celeste smiles and says, I promise I will pass the word on as soon as we get home. And then she will look to you two to see if you wanted to stay or if you are ready to go.
Sadra is ready to go. She's still introspective.
You will prepare one more pitcher of spiced hot cider. Let's say, be sure to drink it in about an hour. It loses its flavor after that.
The old woman laughs, and Celeste will get that sly smile on her face again, and speak up and say, now, Granny, my brother has come to visit you since he's returned, right? And Granny will look at her and say, now, which one do you mean? Well, Bruman, of course. The only one that's left recently. Oh, right. Of course. Silly me. My mind is not as sharp as it used to be, you know. And Celeste will kind of wave her off like, oh, don't be silly. And she'll say, of course he came by. And Celeste will say, sure that he's told you stories of his adventures. And the old lady will laugh again. Some of them are very hard to believe, my dear. I promise you, they sound quite far-fetched. And Celeste will smile again and say, well, perhaps you can consider Mew's gifts to be a reinforcement of some of those stories. And the old woman will laugh once again. Now, if you'll excuse us, Gran, we had other things that we needed, other places we needed to stop by today. Gran said, of course, it's always lovely to see you, my dear. Come back anytime you wish. And Celeste will come and head towards the door with, I'm assuming, the both of you following.
Indeed.
Yes.
Alrighty. And then she will step out into the street and look back at you both with that sly smile of hers again. And say, now where was it that you wanted to go?
He turns to Sadra and says, I really wish to stop by the temple first. And then possibly the market. I'm looking for a, and it might sound unusual, full-length mirror of my own.
Sadra pulls herself out of her moment of melancholy and smiles and says, yes, I think that would be fine.
All right, Celeste will turn and lead you to, it's probably more of a church than a temple. Probably doesn't have like the fancy outward appearance that you would think necessarily of when you think of a temple, but she will lead you there and introduce you to the first person that she finds inside. And they all, obviously they know her because she's Klein's daughter, but they also know her because she's also one of the more religious ones of the family. And she will again introduce you as Bruman's friends that are in town visiting.
Good afternoon, Father. How far are you with this day?
Quite well. And yourself?
As well as can be expected. We live, we breathe, we continue and subsist. What else could we ask for?
He smiles politely at you. Is there anything in specific I can help you two with?
Cedra will glance over at Mew before answering. Say, well, to be quite forthright with you, Father, we are only just come to Chanson. We are here visiting Bruman. He's a friend of ours, and we've come to understand a little bit about this war that's been going on between Erebon and Chanson, and about when it started. I wondered if perhaps you might have some more insight as one who perhaps has a higher view of the goings on around here. Do you know what could be behind it?
He gives you a compassionate look and says, I wish I had the answer for you.
Were you here for the first day? The autumn evening when Erebon first attacked?
Unfortunately, yes.
What do you know of it?
What specifically do you mean? Are you wanting a play-by-play?
Not necessarily. From every account that we've heard, those of Erebon attacked without any provocation whatsoever. Are there any rumors, even the day before? Did you speak with them freely?
Well, I can't say that I necessarily personally spoke with them the day before, but as far as I'm aware, there was no indication that any of this was going to start. Not really any indication of why it would have started, and why it continues.
And if this seems untoward, have you ever managed to take any of the Arabans hostage? Not even so much as hostage, as stop their f***ing without killing. Hold them to keep them from hurting themselves or others. Or better yet, were there any injured who needed your attention and care?
We do not take captives. That is not our way. But yes, I have helped with the wounded.
Did they speak of anything? Even their fast and most wild fever dreams, they must have said something.
He gives you a curious look and replies, "You would think so. But no, they only spoke of home and wanting to be back with their families."
Were they angry at you? Did they seem malicious or violent towards you?
He gives you a careful smile and says, "Well, that depends on the time of day. You see, I may be a man of God, but I also help protect the city. When you are up against a man with a sword, you're not exactly feeling friendly towards him."
But even when they have been subdued and you're caring for them before they are returned, are they still angry, or do they seem more repentant?
He considers for a moment and then answers, "Well, it differs from person to person. Some maintain their anger, and some seem almost guilty, I suppose you could say. Their enemy helping them after they've tried to wound and destroy them."
Do any seem regretful at all? They wish that they didn't have to take the actions that they did?
Regretful, yes, but whether it's because they did not wish to take the actions or because we were healing them, I cannot say.
Did the Arabans... When we spoke with the council, they mentioned that the injured you heal in return, and the dead you return as well. Do the Arabans also follow the same practice?
The man glances at Celeste, and Celeste looks at over at you and kind of glances back at him, then back at you, and says, I think you misunderstand. We don't attack Arabin. We only defend. They have no one to return."
"But I believe the council had mentioned that they had sent over ambassadors, and ambassadors hadn't returned. Do you believe they were simply captured? I personally had assumed they were slain." And I could be completely misremembering that, but I thought that was said. I could be completely wrong, though.
Yeah, I'm not remembering what was said in the council meeting. So, would it be sufficient if I gave you that answer later after I listened to the council meeting?
Excellent. Yep, that's perfectly fine. I'm glad to see that Jensen still stands strong, regardless of the actions of your sister city.
The man and Celeste both nod their heads. Yes, Kyria protects us.
I have one other question, Father. Do you have services every day here at the church?
He smiles at you. Not so much services, but you are welcome to come any time. The next service is going to be New Year's morning.
I think I should like to come.
Celeste will smile then and say, you are more than welcome to join us.
Then Sadra will bow to the father and thanks, and she's ready to go.
You will follow.
Okie doke. And Celeste will lead you out of the church and down to somewhere where Mew can find himself a full-length mirror.
I'd also like to see the merchants in the area.
Specifically the ones that travel?
Indeed.
Are you looking specifically for ones that are from Chansen that also go to Erebin?
Either way. Or if there are some, actually, if there are ones who are from Erebin who are currently trading with Chansen, that would be even better.
Alright. I'm assuming you mentioned this to Celeste as you're walking.
Of course.
She will inform you that there are no current Erebin merchants that are there, and the trading that they do is kind of like a neutral sort of training. They don't go directly to the city of Erebin, but she will try to get you to a merchant that has interacted in the way that you are seeking. And she'll also mention that there is a more or less like a third-party merchant, if you will, someone that's not based in Chansen but does trade with both cities, that should be coming in probably tomorrow before New Year's, because he tends to come celebrate some of their holidays with them, and they're anticipating his presence for New Year's.
Indeed, and I'm sure his wares sell much better near a holiday as well.
Indeed, and they tend to be a little bit more interesting than what you can find just in Chansen.
Okay. So, I'm assuming Mew's getting the vibe that they trade with each other, but they trade with each other through essentially a neutral middleman?
Yes.
Got it. That makes sense. That essentially answers his questions. How much would a full-length mirror cost?
I don't know, Mako. How much would a full-length mirror cost?
I'm thinking 1 gold beef is fair.
Sure. I'll let you call the prices on that one, because I don't even know where to look that up.
I'll look it up, and we'll pay the price, whatever it happened, maybe. But yeah, Mew will go get his full-length mirror.
Okie dokie.
And Sadra will just pick up some more parchment, some more pencils, things like that, that she's been using for her different sketchings. But while she's there, she's also going to ask some of the merchants, not necessarily around Celeste, but just ask a couple of the merchants where it is that they meet with the merchants from Araben. And she got a 27 on the diplomacy check to try to find that information.
And they will probably tell you without too much hesitation, especially if Celeste has mentions that you're Bruman's friends. Word travels quickly in Chanson, so they all know that you are under Bruman's honor, and that kind of makes him feel a little bit better about trusting you guys. And they would probably tell you pretty easily, especially with, you know, that good of a diplomacy. And they would tell you that it was the big city, and where that is in High Fantanar, I'm not sure. Originally looking, it was towards Brandon. Is that what we looked at still?
The closest large city was Brandon, yes.
But I don't know if that's actually a good spot. But so we'll just say whatever of the larger cities is the correct one.
All right, that's fine. Just so long as essentially she wants a name that she can put a pin on a map and potentially go there to talk to people from Araben. So that's fine. She has her name.
Okay. All right. Was there anything else you all wanted to do in town?
Not in town, then we would like to go back and see Coda. It's a bit of a question for him, but he wants to do it closer to sunset.
Okay. Celeste will lead you back home. And let me think for a sec. Alright, she will lead you back to the manor house, and thank you very much for joining her on her expedition, and she hopes that you enjoyed yourself, and then she will very lightly suggest that perhaps you might want to spend a little bit more time in the library.
You will take it into consideration.
Say that again.
Could you guys hear me?
We can hear you now.
Okay. Sadra, when Celeste mentioned that they should potentially go do more reading in the library, Sadra asked her if there was a particular subject matter that she thought that they should read about.
She will smile carefully and say, well, you had some questions that you asked that perhaps you could get a better answer to in the library. A more detailed answer, if you will.
I will take your word for it.
Sadra does kind of a slow nod, like she thinks she's getting it. So she will turn and go back to the library. And she will be looking specifically for information about that time period, right at that change, and if there's any information about Arabin at that time, if there was a change in power, if there was any particular people that showed up around that time that were noted, that sort of thing.
Okie doke. Rydia, can you hear us?
Yeah.
Are we clear now?
I'm not quite sure. I think so.
All right, and I'll quickly check in my Katsu. Are you still sleeping? All right, what is Katsu up to?
Getsu will be definitely be up by now, and he'll just be kind of like poking around, like seeing how what the ventures are going on, pretty much.
All right. If you woke up while they were gone, you would have noticed that they were gone. Nobody's in the kitchen at the moment. Marianne has left. Azel is out in the back with Shass and Lillian and Coda, and we'll just say that by now Marianne has retrieved lead and taken him up for a nap.
Okay. He'll probably I guess he'll go find Azel, you know, the closest party member.
Okie doke. It's not hard to find your way outside. And you see the group of young ladies and Coda. And I will let you guys have at it.
Katsu will walk up to Rydia and say, not Rydia, Azel. will walk up to Azel and say hello and ask where the rest of the party.
Oh, I'm not actually quite sure. I haven't seen any of them in a while. Last I knew, they wanted to go to the library, I believe.
Okay, as long as they didn't go too far. I'd hate to, for them to get hurt and I'm not be able to be nearby.
Well, hopefully that won't happen.
Yeah, but still I should probably go check on them. You said the library, right?
Yeah.
Right,
also, before he leaves, Azel's gonna lean over to Coda and be like, "That's Katsu, the mountain wizard."
The mountain wizard!
Does someone say my name? And he'll pose.
Will you tell me a story?
Of course. What story do you wish to hear?
Coda thinks really hard. The one with the guys that fought you all and you beat them down really hard.
Well, you see, there are these guys that are causing quite a ruckus. And we were just trying to keep the peace. And, of course, as the mountain wizard, peace must be kept. And, yes, we did beat them quite handedly. And they learned their lessons to not cause such a ruckus again. And then I'll do another pose.
Did you tell them that it's mean to punch people in the throat?
Yes. It's mean to punch people in the throat.
Good. Because that was mean. Can you do some of your magic?
But of course. And he'll take out a few gold pieces, and he will cast, I believe it's sun metal on them to make them shine and sparkle. And then, let's see. Next, what he'll do is he'll start, I don't know if I'll need to roll a performance check, but he'll start juggling the coins, kind of, in one hand.
Sure, why not?
Sun metal on it?
So what?
While they have sun metal on it?
Yes.
Maybe you might go with light.
Oh.
Sun metal makes it hot, like red hot.
Well, I thought it didn't hurt the user, but
you might be right. You might be correct. I haven't looked at it.
I mean, let me go look again because that would look really silly. But anyway, yes. The reason why is because he wants to juggle it and then, say, create water and create a rainbow effect with the sun metal. But I guess using light would also create the same effect and not have a chance to burn his hands. So I will use light instead, but I guess I still have to roll for the juggling. Roll a performance check for the juggling.
Sure, go for it.
Alright, give me 1 second. I rolled a 2. And I don't have anything in my performance, I don't believe. No. So that's a 2.
Alright. You start juggling with your lit coins, and you're going to try to do water, you said?
Yes, create water to make a rainbow effect to add mist in the air.
You try to make your mist in the air, and you realize that it's really cold, and the mist particles that you made kind of freeze right as you're trying to juggle, so it comes more of a cloud, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Nonetheless, Coda is still delighted because you used magic.
Not quite what I want to do, but I suppose it works. I suppose what next I can do, I'll say, where is it? I'll do, level 2 summon monster and summon a positive elemental. Not to, like, really do anything, but just to, like, look cool.
And it was a what elemental?
Positive elemental. I don't think those really have a shape, so I guess it'd be... I'm just going to say the shape of a cat, because he likes cats.
Okay, so you have a cat-shaped light being?
Yes.
It's just like our cats, and he tries to pick him up.
Can elementals be touched? I'm going to have to look that up.
I have no clue.
I'm gonna go with that he can't pick it up, but he feels no, it's just a positive elemental, so I guess he'll feel more positive.
He tries to pick it up, but his hands go through it, but he's still utterly delighted. Because, hey, it's a magical cat. He's never seen a magical cat before. This cat is way cooler than the 2 cats that he has.
This is my magical companion, Tukai. He's gone on many adventures, you and I. And he snuffs out the evil in this world, and he's totally making this up, and goes and helps me smite the baddies. There's a lot of injustice in this world, but someone has to take care of it.
Like the big mountain that Master Mew told us about?
Like the big mountain Master Mew told you about.
Is it true that you can shoot ice?
Well, that's more Azel's thing, that she can shoot kind of like ice, I believe.
Not technically, no.
But what I can do is quick, tell me what's the first object that comes to your head. Tell me something that comes to your head. A creature, an object.
He pulls out his dagger.
Alright. I'm going to make something that looks like your dagger. And he will pick up a rock and use stone shape and make it look like his dagger.
Oh, that's really neat. Does it work just like my dagger?
It doesn't. It's not as sharp as yours, of course. But I'm pretty sure you could still poke someone really hard with this.
And he looks over at Lillian and gives her a brilliant smile. Do you think I could still use this to protect Miss Lillian?
I believe you could. Yes. He'll make sure it's a lot more, well, I guess, dull before he hands it over to Coda. So it's more used as a blunt weapon, I suppose. So, you know, non-lethal. So if someone does try to rough something up, he can at least keep them at bay. And then if, I guess, he needs to really do something, he'll use his actual dagger.
He is thrilled, and he runs over to Lily and goes, Look, I have two, so the next time Master Norton starts talking to you again and it makes you really mad, now I can fight him off with two daggers! And Lillian just face palms.
Katsu smiles to himself. I did good today. Also, he'll head over to the library if he can.
He certainly can.
Alright, I'll head to the library to find the rest of the party.
Alrighty. Azel, is there anything you wanted to do?
Seeing as everything is still cutting in and out, I'm going to say no for now.
Okie doke. If you would like, we can certainly do some stuff in chat, like on Hangouts, if that would be something you would like.
That'd be fine.
Okie doke. Okay, then for the sake of story, I will say that after a little while, after Katsu goes inside, Lillian would probably suggest that the ladies and Coda go inside and warm up a little bit, dry off a little bit. They've been out in the snow for several hours, and probably time to take a break. So they will probably all head inside. I'm assuming Azel would join them. But Coda would more likely than not suggest that after Azel changes, she comes and sees his room because he's very proud of it. So then we will hop back over to the library.
All right. Muse reading.
All right, you're in the library, and you get this. Well, let's see. We'll have Katsu come in. Go ahead, Katsu.
Yay! Katsu will come in and ask and see Mew, and seeing that Mew is reading something, he's actually pretty curious, so he's actually going to go over there and, like, look at what Mew is reading.
Uh-huh. Katsu, welcome.
Hey, Mew, I see the, is this where everyone off, is this where everyone went off to?
Yes, indeed, this is where the cool kids stay.
Oh, I guess I just didn't get the memo.
Well, you found your way here, so looks like you have the natural inclination to being drawn to the cool kids.
Katsu just proudly nods to himself. So, why are you reading?
Short history of Chansen and history books.
Just for knowledge or pleasure, well, or
honestly. You've heard of the war that's been going on here. It's unusual. There's no reason why it should be going on. The attackers have asked for nothing. The defenders have done nothing but defend. It should have ended years ago. And yet it's lasted over a decade.
Okay.
And Sadra actually cuts in at that point from the other side of the room. Says, and nobody seems to know why it started in the first place. And she's obviously starting to look annoyed by the fact that there's no answers.
Well, Katsu tries to think to himself, we could always know that.
Any suggestions would be welcome.
Well, I do have a few ideas, but they're kind of on the sinister side, and they would mayhaps cause the war to escalate, so...
He leans forward, extremely interested.
Well, I was thinking that we could... I suppose sneak into the enemy base again, capture one of their leaders or someone who knows what's going on. If someone knows like a truce spell or something like that, like force them to tell us why. But again, you know, kidnapping a high general in the enemy camp is sure to spark some, you know, flames.
Indeed, though, honestly, I kind of like the way you think. I have a few other ideas that might be less, I don't know, treasonous.
That would be nice, yes.
But, yes, I had contemplated something similar, but Erebin is a full day's ride off. And they did specifically ask us not to leave the city. If we were gone for a full day, well, that would not look very good.
Yeah, only if they knew we were gone for a full day.
It would be 2 days at very least. A day to get there, a day to get back.
Yeah, that's true.
But believe me, I have been thinking of things rather similar. There might be a way that we might be able to get there faster. Or we could... Oh, it's complicated. It's another experimental one, and I don't feel like experimenting with magic at the moment. We could end up right in town, or we could end up 500 miles off.
There is something else, I suppose. And out of character question, for clerics and spells, I just have to memorize a spell for the day and I can have said spell, or yep. Okay.
Which I was actually going to joke and say, Mew says, actually, Katsu, you have a truth spell.
Yeah. Okay, because I did find one that sounds slightly less treasonous, which is build trust, which is gain various bonuses when interacting with the target. So instead of actually, you know, kidnapping them, it'd be a little bit more, you know, a little less aggregating. I don't know if we could build trust with them.
Sounds like
If we can avoid kidnapping anyone, I think that would be best. We are under Bruman's honor, and I don't want to do anything that would bring him into question in his own home.
Indeed.
Still, if there's a way to talk to them, perhaps Bruman would understand and would be willing to give us leave to go and visit Erebin. Certainly, if we haven't done anything wrong, there's nothing that they can do to detain us. And perhaps we would be able to use your ability to gain trust to find some answers there.
I agree. The only problem is, once again, we promised we would be back in time for the New Year's festival. And even if we don't spend any time in Erebin, it's a full day out, full day back. Yes, I actually specifically asked about how far it was to the other city, just to see if we might be able to make it there and back, but time constraints.
Katsu is looking through a couple of books to give him ideas on spells that they could use. Katsu feels a sudden urge to look around the room more in general and more in detail.
I'm trying to decide if I need to make him roll perception or not.
Oh, okay. I was about to say. Yeah, I can roll for perception. That's fine. And see if I nail it or not. 17 plus 5. So 22, I believe.
Fantastic. All right. You look around the room, and it's a pretty normal library, right? You've got your fireplace, your chairs, your table, your 10 million books, or so it seems. Obviously, not quite 10 million. That's a slight exaggeration. But it can kind of feel like that at times, right? And as you're looking around, you you know, you see some papers stacked up on the table, and you keep glancing around, and you notice that there is something that doesn't really fit in a library on the mantle.
Well, that's slightly odd. And he'll go and investigate the mantle a little bit more. Should I roll another perception check, or...?
Nope. What you see is in the chat.
We need permission.
I need permission.
Hold on.
Request access!
A piece of paper with a lock on it.
Try that one.
Okay, I got snow globe.
Yes.
Alright. Curious thing, and he'll look at the snow globe-like object. Maybe even shake it.
Does he pick it up and shake it?
He picks it up and shakes it.
Alright. Make a wisdom check.
This is a terrible idea, wasn't it? That's actually a natural 20.
Wow, that is impressive.
So, what does that mean?
All right. I'm way too tired for this, guys. Okay, you pick up the snow globe and shake it. And as you're shaking it, trying to get it to do its typical snow globe-y stuff, it doesn't seem to actually do anything inside the snow globe. However, there seems to be this sort of misty fog coming out of it and filling the room. And you get this feeling in the back of your mind like it's asking you a question. And the more you think about it, the more it seems like it's asking you when and what details. What do you wish to see?
All right. I mean, I know I'm supposed to say, but I'm trying to think what would I actually say in this situation. I'm going to say, what are we going to have for breakfast? Because he's quite hungry at the moment.
The fog continues to swirl around you, continuing to fill the room.
He will call attention to the other people that there's fog suddenly filling the room.
I noticed!
having
fun over there, what? Starting your own rave.
I don't
Are you
know.
Sure this is a good idea?
No, I picked this up and it started fogging up everything. I thought it was just my glasses at first, but I think there's something really wrong with this thing.
Mew's gonna focus in on it and use detect magic.
Sadra is just like standing on the window seat, trying not to touch the fog that's pooling on the floor.
Can you remind me what detect magic detects?
If it's magical and after a certain amount of time, what school of magic it happens to be?
It is most certainly magical.
I knew it!
Who puts magic on a snow globe? Gatsu is a little distraught because he thought it was an innocent snow globe.
Yes. So whether or not it's magical, the strength of the magical aura, and I need to make an arcana check to determine the school of magic.
Okay.
~29 for knowledge arcana.
I'm not actually sure what the strength is, because I totally just made the whole thing up myself.
Cool. But,
this is where I say, just go with it.
Okay.
But your school of magic seems to be divination.
Okay.
I think.
That was going to be my guess as well. Mew goes up and says, well, it doesn't seem to be a necromantic fog. It's a good sign. And he goes forward and also reaches out and says, Katsu, what do you feel?
He says to himself, it feels a little weird to be in here. I feel like there's that too. I feel like something is asking me a question of what or when.
Would you mind if I also touched it with you?
Sure, go ahead if you want to be cursed.
You brings his hands out towards the globe, and then when you say, if you want to be cursed, he stops and is like, shrugs, and then puts his hand in the snow globe.
Should I be making you make the same check?
I don't know. Should I?
I can. Sure, go ahead.
Yeah.
So that's definitely not a natural 20. That's a 4. For just pure wisdom check.
That includes your wiz mod?
My wiz modifier is 0.
But hey, you have this nifty ring on your finger, so you get to re-roll it, right?
Indeed, I will use that. I didn't realize it was a saving throw.
It's not a saving throw, but we'll say it works.
Awesome. All right, that is much better. That is 16.
All right. You touch it, and you can also feel the same pressure in the back of your mind that something seems to be asking you a question, and it's not quite as strong as what Cassiu got, but you definitely get this question of when.
And Mew thinks, draws an unknown self, and says, the day Erebin attacked.
And the mists suddenly take on the shape of the city of Chansen as though you were a bird flying over it. And, gathering my thoughts, hold on. You see the city much as the old lady described it, as being happy and jovial, and there's lots of people mulling about. Most of them seem to be up towards the manor house that's on the top of the hill. And they're going about their different festival activities. smiles on their faces. They're laughing. It's a happy, jovial time. And then you can't really hear anything, but at the same time you feel like you can hear something, but it's definitely not an audible sort of hearing, if you will. Okay. But you definitely get the idea that the bells that the lady told you about are ringing. You can see the looks of confusion on the faces of the people, and then the confusion changes into like a fear, almost the panic, if you will. You can tell that the city is not very well defended. I mean, it's definitely walled, but the gates were open. There weren't a whole lot of people walking the walls or anything. It was a holiday. They were celebrating. And you can see from your bird's eye view, if you look outside of the wall, you can see a large force heading towards the city. And as the gates were not initially closed, it was not very hard for them to reopen them when they were just quickly closed and not barricaded or anything. So the city was actually overrun pretty quickly. And you see a lot of the women and the children running back as close to the manor house as possible. A lot of them going inside, probably for cover, you can imagine. And you see all of the men of the city are going in the opposite direction. It's a lot of chaos, calamity. The initial line of defense, the guys that were originally armed, they made a stand, but they didn't have much of a chance, if you will. They were definitely taken off guard. And you can watch. You can tell me however long you watch and stop me whenever you want to stop. But
sorry. Continue if you wish.
No, it's up to you. Because if Mew stops it, then it'll stop. Yeah.
He will continue over, and the size of the force, how big is that force? Is it like 50 people, 100 people, 10,000 people? And the reason that I'm asking is because Mew wants to determine whether or not this was a spontaneous thing where people just ran together and almost in a blind rage came to this town, or if this was definitely premeditated. Everyone is well-dressed, their spears are polished, their armor is all in place, and they have decided ahead of time to march on the city. Would it be some sort of knowledge check?
No, I was verifying information with husband because he helps me think things through.
Cool.
From what you can see, it's definitely over 1,000. You can't see all the way because of where the fog part ends, but it looks like it's a considerably large force, probably the full military of Erebin, if not a little bit more. Their armor is plenty polished. They look like they're ready to fight, if that answers your question.
That very much answers my question. Yeah. He takes a little bit of time to soar over the army as they're swarming through, just to get a quick number as best he can, and then he will drop it. And as he comes back out, he turns to Sadra and says, I saw Erebin the day they first took Chansen. This wasn't something that came up on that day. This wasn't a ragtag team of angry farmers with pitchforks. This was a militarized force with burnished armor, gleaming spears. They chose the day that they chose well. This was premeditated. They wanted it to be the holiday, when Shanson would be least defended. Oh.
Yes, just to clarify, Sadra and Katsi would have seen that too. They just wouldn't have had the ability. Well, Katsu could have had the ability to direct the fog. Sadra would not have, because she wasn't touching it. If that makes sense.
It does. He turns to Sadra and says, "You saw it too. What are your conclusions?"
I don't know. I don't know.
I know of no magics that last 12 years on a person's mind. If it was magic, it must have been constantly reapplied.
Which would mean that the caster is still there.
Exactly.
So we're going to focus on finding the caster then, right?
Possibly. There are other entities that might be able to accomplish something such as this. If you remember Boss Croat, she wasn't so much a caster as the nature of her heritage. She could change minds with a gaze. And that is the one thing that I'm most afraid of. As much as I hate it, there have to be answers somewhere. I'll look more into it, see what I can find. Like I said, I have a few ideas, but I'll hold off on implementing them just yet. I want to make sure that they work the way that they're supposed to before I, meddle.
I understand. And he'll give a smile.
Sadra, what are your thoughts?
I know that Bruman and his family do not want us to be involved, but I cannot escape the same conclusion that the only answer I can think of must lie in Erebon.
Indeed. We have obligations here, promises that we must keep. But after the New Year's, I propose a bit of espionage.
Yes, I think that would be a good idea.
But for the time being, let's continue to enjoy the family. Act as if you've seen nothing. I have something, a bit, that I'd like to show Coda and Chase, if they were interested in it, or Chas, I'm sorry. I think those two would be the most interested. About what time of day is it?
It's probably mid to late afternoon.
Okay.
So yeah, maybe 3:30-ish.
Yeah. Muse eventually would like to speak with them, but he wants to make sure that he can see them around sunset.
Okie doke. Okay, well, about that time, you hear out in the hallway a young voice saying, "Master Mew, where are you?"
Mew halfway contemplates actually hiding from him, but then realizes that he would never find him. So he goes and steps out the door.
There you are!
Ah, Coda. I haven't seen you. How's your morning been?
Great. We went and played in the snow. and for the record, I'm going to go ahead and say that Azel and Brew are with him. Probably Lillian as well. Possibly even Chess.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm hoping you had no snowball fights.
He gives you a very serious look. No. No snowball fights.
And Mew smiles up at Azel and says, "Good. Now I have a surprise for you and your sister Chess, but I would like to ask what her thoughts would be first. Before I actually... Yes, I do have a surprise for the two of you."
Chas will glance up at Brew. He'll just give her, you know, the raised eyebrow, "It's up to you" sort of look. She'll give you a very skeptical look. "What kind of surprise?"
"You're the one with the falcon, correct?"
"Yes."
"You ever wondered what it would be like to see through the eyes of your falcon?"
She actually glances at Brew. And he again gives her a, "I trust them. You can tell." She'll look back at you and consider for a moment. Look you in the eye and say, "I already can. And we can stop it right there."
Oh!
Or is that too much of a cliffhanger for you?
I don't know if I can hang on.
Can't hold on much longer. Yeah, I'm glad you remember that too.
old TV show.
Between the Lions.
Hey, quick question. When Mew went out of the library, did yes. Katsu go with them, or did Katsu stay in the library?
I'm gonna say Katsu stayed in the library just to see if he could find spell books or something like that to help them find the caster. Because that's currently what I'm doing, since I know that I can change my spells. I'm looking for something that can help find the caster and help end this war.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I probably should have warned you, Lorien. If you give players a mystery to solve, we really won't stop until it's solved.
Yeah, I figured that out. That's why I poke.
Who's the snow globe, guys?
Oh my goodness.
I tried to change my notes so that it y'all could explore your mystery a little bit.
Mm. I was half expecting whoever touched the globe to crit fail and just not have a clue.
Same.
It's a snow globe. Puts it back, walks out of the room.
Yep. So when Katsu critted, it was like, whoa!
I got this, guys. I know magic.
Exactly. All that stress over DCs for nothing. Well, I guess we had it from you, so.
Yep.
Indeed.
Although Katsu's now scarred for life and will use detect magic on everything.
Good.
Ah, he will join Brew in this endeavor then.
Yep.
The torch wasn't enough?
Detect magic.
I mean, when you're inside dungeon, then yeah, I can understand that. But he was just like, oh, I'm in a house, secured, in a library. He would not think to use detect magic on a random object that he decided to look at. That's why he was like lamenting, who would put magic on a snow globe? Like, why would you do that? It was so innocent.
Though, Lorien, I do have a question.
Okie doke.
Do the people of the town seem to be more adverse to arcane magic specifically, as opposed to divine magic?
I'm not sure that they would necessarily know the difference.
Okay, so they very much like clerics.
Oh yes, there have been. I probably shouldn't tell you actually why they like clerics. I should make you discover that yourself.
I will discover it myself. Work for it. But yeah, because I'm like, there's a cleric in Bruman's family, and I kind of assumed when you're like, hey, this person with, you know, a bow and arrow and stealth and has an animal companion, like, probably a ranger. So, yeah, when you're like, yeah, I read earlier the can, I was like, yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I was like, when Mew was using prestidigitation and she was like very much pushing the fact, I was like, oh, look, magic is great. I'm like, this person who visits you every day is a cleric. Like, also primary caster. Not exactly sure. And then you're like, oh, the only other person who came through town was Alea. I was like, Alea was also a cleric. So I was just, yeah. I'm just like, okay, it makes sense. Like, I can see how people would be like, divine magic is great. Arcane magic is terrible. Possibly. Though I do have my suspicions based on the original discussion.
Also, they probably wouldn't trust Azel, even though she is a divine caster.
That makes sense.
The whole turning into a bird thing, you mean? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Sure, that. Uh-huh.
Yeah, because, I mean, think about it. How terrible would it be if you're like, hey, there's just a mouse in the house, and then, hey, surprise, it's actually an assassin.
Yeah, that's a good point. We just won't tell them.
Exactly. If they have not realized that at this point.
How high level do you have to be to go from a medium-sized creature to a, what would that be, diminutive?
Pretty decently high level, but I mean still a bird. Or even someone taking over their replacing their cat.
Or take a cue from Shannara and, you know, replace the Basset Hound.
I think you only have to be level 6 to be able to...
For a diminutive animal, it's level 8. For a tiny animal or a small elemental, it's 6 level.
So you can actually become elementals?
Oh yeah, and plants, and plant creatures. Yeah.
That's actually really awesome. Okay, scratch that. The person literally becomes air.
I think you can still technically see an air elemental.
Probably. But still, that would be slightly terrifying.
Slightly? Oh, because this seems somewhat relevant to the current conversation. Yep, all 4 of you would have noticed that the honor guard is no longer in the hallway, by the way.
Interesting.
Which probably would have come out if we had been able to continue with Azel going inside.
She's much relieved at that, by the way.
Yeah. Honestly, I was thinking about, like, it might not have been the best idea to use Mew as, like, the person to be like, hey, look, Castus are great. They're not bad people at all.
Yeah, but does Celeste know that?
No.
But do you know what she knows?
You hasn't heard anyone yet?
Mew has not heard anyone yet. But Brew also has not told you the stories that he has told, so...
This is true. Yeah. Yeah, when I actually looked that up and I was like, oh, this is way more expensive than I thought. And I was like, well, right. Medieval times, mirrors would have been very expensive.
So that's not a mundane object, huh?
It's not a trivially priced object.
Okay, it's not magical, but it's not mundane really either.
I think Pathfinder uses mundane as to mean not magical.
Yeah, in Pathfinder game terms, yeah, it does. I'm thinking a little more generally, though.
Yeah. So, I'm like, that is going to be more expensive than I thought.
Alright, guys, I gotta sign off. I am, So, you all have a wonderful evening and a great weekend, and I'm sure I will talk to you on Hangouts before Tuesday.
Have a good Indeed. Night. Thanks for coming.
Night.
Good night.
Later.
Yeah, because I was honestly thinking about, because I kind of designed Mew to sort of be an assassin. Especially with the concept of, like, locked room mysteries. Especially after he took Dimension Door. Because, I mean, if you think about it, he could stand outside a building, know which room the person is in, teleport next to their bed, take them out, and then teleport back and walk away.
Also, just in case if you guys ever want this, Azel can actually change people, other people, into basically mist. Have fun.
Ooh.
They have to be willing, though.
That would be quite interesting if they had forgotten to include that. And I touch you, and you turn into mist.
Yeah, there's no saving throw.
That is awesome.
Okay, I've missed the start of that. What is this that does that?
It is called Gaseous Form.
Wasn't it discussed that things like that have to have a willing subject? There's a implied saving throw if there's not a if they're not willing.
No, like the spell itself says the person that you're casting this on must be willing, otherwise the spell just doesn't work.
Oh, it just doesn't work, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you recall, actually Belinar used that when you guys were going after Rolf.
I'm not actually recalling that at the moment for some reason.
I think that's fair game as far as I know.
Question for Lorien.
Yes?
How long would it take to get to Erebin if you're flying?
I honestly don't know.
No clue. How would you even calculate that?
Figure out how long it takes to ride a day. Would it be a day's walk, a day on horseback? Find out how far a horse can travel in a day, and then find out your fly speed.
Fly speed of 80 feet.
The only problem is, how long can you stay in that shape?
7 hours.
Excellent.
And I can do this twice a day, I think. Yeah, twice a day.
So you can get there and get back? How much could you carry in that shape?
Everything on me shifts with me.
If you didn't want it to shift... Because I'm wondering if Mew asked the Brumman's family for like a strong box to keep all their stuff in. He and possibly one other person could. Well, actually, if we had a mirror, I could get everybody inside the mirror. We could put the mirror inside the bag of holding. The mirror wouldn't be able to work until we got it back out of the bag of holding, but we would still be able to breathe inside the mirror as opposed to being inside the bag of holding. The reason I was asking because I was curious if we could carry 5 pounds.
Well, the form I was thinking of was an eagle, so maybe, although it is a small animal, considered a small one.
I'll look it up.
Yeah, considered small animal. Has a strength of 10.
Oh, yeah. So, I'd have to... The main thing I'm worried about is I'm worried about too many magical things interacting poorly. Because I could set up the mirror, get everyone inside the mirror, we put the mirror inside the bag of holding, and then have you shift, which would put the bag, that which would cause the bag to be shifted into your form. normally the mirror cannot be moved, otherwise it expels the people, but it states with extra dimensional spaces that the extra dimensional space becomes mundane while it is inside another extra dimensional space, unless it's a portable hole, which has very negative repercussions. So if you put a bag of holding in another bag of holding, the first bag of holding would simply look like a normal bag until you pulled it out of the other bag of holding. Then you could get your stuff.
I am so confused because I missed most of that.
Okay. You put an extra dimensional space inside an extra dimensional space, and the one inside just stops working, but everything inside is considered trapped until you pull it out of the second extra dimensional space. It spits you out. And you're considered nauseated. Oh, you're also considered nauseated for, I think, 1d4 rounds. Just, you know, being thrown from one dimension to another.
I was thinking it damaged the person that was in the dimension if the mirror got broken.
Nope, just makes them really, really sick.
Which means if said person that broke it is hostile, the person inside is just about done for.
Pretty much, because there's the good chance it's going to be two rounds that you just can only move.
Can't cast, can't anything.
Exactly. Nauseated for 1d6 rounds. Possible if I actually took a mirror teleport. Which would allow me to teleport between any mirror within range.
I'm seeing a scene from Naruto now.
Pretty much. It's the same level as Dimension Door. And the distance is the same. It's just that you can go between multiple ones. And there are very few scenarios where you're going to have multiple full-length mirrors.
So what actually defines a mirror? Could someone create a reflective ice block, and would that qualify?
I guess that would depend on the GM. I considered a reflective piece of crystal enough to be a mirror for the spell to work in the past. And I also asked about the sheet of ice when we went to go fight the white dragon. And I believe they said that also qualified. But never actually had my plan. My plan was to just turn the entire sheet of ice into a mirror and just drop the dragon inside. But I was like, it didn't come up. Yep, mirror polish. Contemplated taking that and then putting it on Bruman's shield, so if I ever needed to really escape, I could just hide in Bruman's shield.
Is it permanent?
I don't know. The only problem is Bruman wouldn't be able to move. It just would be that I would be out of range. As soon as Bruman moved, it would spit me onto the mirror. Nice.
Does that matter?
That's true.
But if it was used on shield, then until corrosion or something damages it. Depending on how picky the GM's being, the first time it blocked a sword blow could break it. Well, it could scratch it enough that it wouldn't be considered a mirror anymore.
Possible. Though I'm going to have to do a bit more research as to what happens to the mirror dimension when it is placed within, essentially put the bag of holding over the mirror dimension, because technically it has not moved 5 feet. And as soon as it's in within the bag, it becomes inactive. So everybody would be trapped inside until the mirror was pulled back out again. Well, the inside of the mirror is much bigger than the outside. The main reason we would need the mirror is because we can't breathe inside the bag of holding. Indeed. Indeed. It's a well-known trope for both D&D and Pathfinder. There are people who have what's called portable hole bombs, where essentially it's a no-save throw into another dimension. Very expensive, because a portable hole is like over 10,000 gold pieces, but if you really want something gone, that would be the way to do it.